Hey, citizens of the interweb, you have landed on A Shot and a Beer, a weekly interview podcast featuring chefs, brewers, troublemakers, and heartbreakers. Every week, we're talking food and booze with people who do it for a living. So grab a beer, pour yourself a shot, and come along for the ride. Well, all right, we are rolling with another shot and a beer. Hey, San Diego, how you doing, Maddie?
Top notch, sir. How are you today?
I'm actually pretty good. We're doing a little day drinking today with this is going to be a first for the show. We are going to have our first chocolatier on, and this is exciting for me because I have never really spent any time with anyone who works specifically with chocolate. I know a lot of pastry chefs. They're all insane. Hi, Rachel King. And whether they deny it or not. But our guest today is the lovely Laura Lou Davis from It's Mine Chocolates.
No, it's mine.
Yes, I know it's yours.
Yes, wow. It's mine chocolates.
Wow, this is already going downhill.
We're off to a good start.
Yeah, this is faster than it usually goes downhill. So, Lou, as you prefer to be called, you and I actually, this is going to be another interesting episode in that you and I actually really don't know each other.
No, not at all.
Other than just Facebook conversations about you coming on the show. And that doesn't happen very often. This is usually me drinking with my buddies. So it's nice to actually drink with a stranger once
in a while. It is a welcome change. It kind of levels the playing field a little bit because I never know anybody who's coming in other than Chip when Chip came in. That was nice. But so this is all getting to know each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Maddie has just pointed out, why don't we start with that? As tradition dictates on this show, as much as we have a tradition after six or seven episodes, why don't you tell us a little bit about you? Where are you from? How did you get your start in the world of chocolates? And just give us a quick bio.
Okay, well, I started making chocolates when I was five. And I grew up most of my life here in San Diego, California. My dad was in the military. Mm-hmm. So as long as I can remember, my mom's always made chocolate. So I started with her in the kitchen about five. I started learning. And
did you have an easy bake oven that you started out with?
Actually, no. my mom was hardcore. She was like, here's the kitchen.
Oh, wow, so right into
here's
it.
A stool.
So is your mother a chocolatier, or is she just someone who has a passion for chocolate?
My mom is a chocolatier.
Oh, wow.
She has her own business in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's called Sweet Emotions. So she taught me everything I know, but we make totally different types of chocolates.
Wow, she's from Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Bengals. I'm sorry.
Hey, the Reds won yesterday, didn't they?
Well, the Pirates won opening day, so okay. That's good. And again, we're completely off topic.
Completely.
Which is spectacular.
And we're talking sports, so I'm also lost. So,
so when you have you ever done anything else in the hospitality world?
I've worked in the restaurant industry for 23 years. I started as a hostess. I worked in the kitchen. I was a server. I bartended.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a jack of all trades.
You are well-rounded. Where did you work?
Well, gosh. I worked most of the restaurant industry in Cincinnati at Damon Sports Bar and Grill, place for ribs and football, baseball, whatever you want.
With the big theater rooms?
Silver Spring House was one of my favorite places to work, and I started a little Mexican joint off Beachmont Avenue in Cincinnati. Yep, margaritas.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how long have you been in San Diego?
Oh, my gosh. I moved to San Diego when I was about 3 years old. Mm-hmm. So moved around a little bit when my dad was in the Navy. But in total, probably 28 years out here and 8 years in Cincinnati and, you know, a year in Rhode Island and Vacaville. Yeah, Alameda.
So you, being a brat.
Yeah.
You moved around a lot.
The, I am.
So you really got your start in the hospitality industry in Cincinnati.
Yes.
A lot of good restaurants in Cincinnati.
Lots.
It's an underappreciated food town.
It is.
It's more than just chili. Did you know there, Maddie, did you know?
I did know something that Cincinnati was known for their chili.
Yeah, it is known for their chili.
They also use cinnamon.
Yeah, it's a weird.
Cinnamon and spice.
It's unexpected when you first try it, because the cinnamon is kind of unusual.
Yeah, people are like, ooh, spaghetti? Yeah, it's really good.
That's been.
I'll make you some.
Absolutely, it's been a big adjustment moving to San Diego. Was seeing how much the Mexican cooking uses cinnamon, and discovering a love of horchata.
Oh, horchata is spectacular! Oh,
fantastic. So, like a new appreciation for cinnamon all around with its use.
The other thing that strikes me is when I first came out here. How much of a fan of cilantro I am. And I know you're allowed to say that.
Me too.
Pointing at yourself and... This is radio, darling. Pointing at yourself and going,
fake
me
internet
too.
Radio.
Right,
this is
being in my face.
This is legitimate podcasting.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, it's something growing up... Maddie and I are both from PA.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
awesome.
Which is, for those of you out there who don't know, that is the proper way to say the name of that state. Nobody from Pennsylvania actually says they're from Pennsylvania. They say they're from PA.
I learned something today. That's awesome.
I'm not...
you're gonna contradict me?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That also happened faster than it usually does.
I find I often just say I'm from Philly. And then,
but you're not from Philly. You're from Central PA.
No. I grew up in Phoenixville, which is like 12 miles outside of Philly.
That's far enough away. You don't have to claim Philly.
No, I want to claim Philly.
No, you shouldn't. You really shouldn't.
It just sounds better when you say Philly.
It does sound better. And then it's easier.
That's cooler.
You don't have to like give
well,
the specifics.
Well, actually, what is funny about that, and again, completely off topic. Boy, this show's going to be a fucking mess. But you live closer to Philly than I live, actually, than I grew up to Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
But everybody from Western Pennsylvania claims Pittsburgh.
Claims Pittsburgh, right.
Unless you're from Erie, and, you know, who wants to be from there?
Well, it's Erie.
Exactly.
Right.
You knew you found an odd person when they said, oh, I'm from Bellefonte.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, okay, that's very specific.
Yeah, well, people from the middle of the state tend to get more specific because there's nothing out there. Yeah.
How many people claimed to be from State College?
Right.
The only thing.
Right.
That or Harrisburg.
Who the hell claims from being from Harrisburg?
All right. Well, touche.
Well, again, completely off topic.
So chocolatiering. So,
but no, when I moved out here, growing up, you know. Outside of all the fresh produce and all the fresh herbs and all that, cilantro wasn't something that was really part of the spice palette at home. And I know a lot of people are really down on it. I have friends who tell me they think it tastes like soap, which I think an overabundance of ginger tends to taste soapy.
Yes.
But I just really love cilantro and onions and... that Mexican spice palette, it changes things in a really miraculous and beautiful way. It's, again, sweetie, you can't just sit there and nod.
when I eat something spicy, cilantro, like maybe pineapples and carnitas with cilantro, it literally is like an orgasm in my mouth. Something about that cilantro, that flavor, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Poetic
well, you know,
of words.
Just like
sorry.
No, just like working and living down south, I got a great appreciation for pulled pork. And you come out here, and carnitas is a type of pulled pork, and it's got that beautiful porky goodness to it. But the first time one of my cooks grabbed some of that pulled pork and seared it on the flat top with some onions and cilantro, just something absolutely magical happens when those flavors combine. And it transforms something that I thought I really knew into something else entirely.
Yeah, your whole mouth, your palate is open, your mouth waters. It's an amazing flavor, of course. Yeah, and you can add anything to cilantro, pizza.
You think
can add it to Alfredo sauce.
Do you think moving around as much as you did growing up with your father in the military, that exposed you to all the different kind of flavors that you use in your chocolatiering now?
No. Just being honest.
No, good answer. My mom, isn't this going to be a good show?
Well, you know, my mom usually made everything in the kitchen. We didn't really go out to eat a whole lot. Maybe Sundays after church, we went to Denny's, and us kids had breakfast or something like that. We travel cross country every year. So it was like truck stop food, or my mom had a cooler. We made our own sandwiches out of whatever we could find in the, you know.
So very blue collar kind of.
Yeah, exactly. So my mom literally opened the cabinet and goes, what is there to make? You can throw anything in a tortilla. You know what I mean? Any kind of leftovers and make something fun. And my brothers and I being in the kitchen, it was just great. We come up with rubs and marinades and everything else. It was amazing.
Well, it's one of those things that a lot of people think that just because you have lived several different places in the country, that it's not everybody's parents, at least mine. Mine, it sounds like my upbringing was very similar to yours. We lived in Pittsburgh, but mom was home. Mom was a housewife, and mom is still a housewife. But we didn't go out to eat an awful lot. We didn't go explore different cuisines. I had to learn more about food once I got out on my own to find out that there was a whole world that had kind of been hidden from me, because mom made very kind of blue-collar dishes at home.
Yeah.
And she always cooked at home.
Yeah.
There wasn't ever anything really exotic going on at the Prohaska house growing up. So I completely get what you're saying. You know, and military families don't have a lot of money. They're not, unless your dad would have been stationed overseas.
Yeah, I know.
Which a lot of times, especially with Navy people, the spouses and kids can't go.
Yeah, no, they can't.
So, tell us a little bit about when did you first open your chocolate shop?
Well, I don't actually have a chocolate shop. But I started my business in 2011, early 2011, and I don't know. Actually, I started pairing my chocolates with beer with Ballast Point.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I didn't really drink beer. I didn't really like it, to be honest. And I was challenged at the bar by a few years ago by one of the event planners / bartender. He was, like, wore many hats there, and I sat at the table, and my friend was like, give her a beer and dare her, whatever. So they brought me a little taster, the Indra Canindra, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's like dinner in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And I love like Indian food, anything spicy, Thai, whatever. So I tried it, and then from there, I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm not a real big dessert person. Like after I eat dinner, I'm like, I'm not real big on desserts. Mm-hmm. But if it is, it was like rainbow sherbet. Like I love fruity kind of candies and stuff like that. But yeah, all of a sudden I got my notebook out and I started writing and go, oh my gosh, the flavors in this, I want to eat something sweet now.
Right.
So I went home and I made my own caramel. I put cinnamon, coriander, you know, cloves and cardamom in it. Mm-hmm. And I made my own candy ginger with the pretzel. I made like 18 different types of chocolates just to see what the pairing would be the best. And I called it 7 C's around their comment, their concept.
Right.
So like there's 7 ingredients with the letter C in it. So ever since then, it was a hit. You're like, oh my gosh. And then I just started pairing like crazy. And I've worked with 15 local breweries and 3 wineries. And that's kind of got me started.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, I never thought I would actually even like beer. But with the local craft breweries, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much beer out there. I've never imagined it tasting so good.
Well, yeah. And that was another eye-opening thing for me coming to San Diego. We've discussed it on this show. I grew up drinking regular mass-produced
piss water.
Okay,
sorry.
Yeah. You have lived here for a while.
I'm being honest.
I grew up drinking. I think Dad always drank Miller High Life.
Blue Ribbon.
Yeah. Schmitz and Schlitz. When I was a young kid, I don't even know. I think Schmidt is still around. I don't think Schlitz is, other than malt liquor.
I think you're right. But I know nothing about beer. I know Yingling, and that's...
Well, that's not a bad one to
it's
know.
It's not a bad
about.
One to know, you know, but that's...
So you're not a real big beer drinker.
Not a big beer drinker. Wasn't raised with it, so Dad was a Baptist preacher.
Yeah, my dad was too, hey, huh?
Oh, nice.
Was your dad a chaplain in the Navy?
No. No, he had his own church. I believe I want to say Ann Arbor. Sorry, Dad, if I'm wrong. But yeah, he had it for a little bit. Yep.
Wow.
Wow. And so beer was bad. We went to restaurants. We're like, no, we're not allowed to go anywhere where the bar is.
Where the bar is.
Somewhere else.
Any weddings? Yeah. There was never any alcohol at any weddings?
Yep, nope.
That flipped me out when I went to my, when I lived in Tennessee and I went to my first Baptist wedding. Mm-hmm. The reception, number one, was at the church.
Mm-hmm. Because why not? There's going to be no dancing, no music.
Yeah.
There's no frivolities whatsoever.
And I looked around, and this was when I was married to wife number two.
We have to get the timeline up
on the website.
It's in you, really.
Yeah, but when I was married to wife number two, and we got done with the wedding, and I was like, okay, where's the reception? Oh,
downstairs.
Well, it's in back. In back of what? In back of the church. Okay, then where's the bar? She's like, they're not going to be a bar in a Baptist church, you idiot.
Nope.
I was like, so we're staying, what, 5 minutes?
They'll be baptized in 2 minutes.
There will be fellowship and breaking of bread.
Right.
And
lots of praying.
Lots of praying and possibly some scripture. Possibly. Oof. You never know.
Possibly. It was like nonstop in my house every Friday night. Or Sunday. Dad, get the guitar out.
Michael, row the boat ashore.
Sing Jesus songs. Huh?
Michael, row the boat ashore.
Right. Some aspect, sure.
Our God is an awesome God.
Now, see, no, that was considered a Christian contemporary.
And yeah. Therefore verboten.
Only hymns. Fanny J. Crosby was the last songwriter who was allowed to write anything about God. And that was it. So.
I remember having a DC Talk CD. Well, my brother did. It wasn't a CD, it was a tape. My mom was, we were playing it in the kitchen, you know, getting dinner ready. My dad comes home from work. What is that? Blah, blah. And he pulled the tape out and started pulling the film, whatever, out of the tape.
No kidding.
I'm like, he just heard the sound, but not the words. So we're like, we're trying to get reach of a
contemporary Christian music.
Yeah, nope.
Now, here.
There's no hymnals anywhere.
But here's an interesting thing. My dad loves rock music. So I hymns at church, Thin Lizzy at home, no Christian contemporary. Like, no, they're two separate things. Don't mix them.
Yeah, my dad loved oldies music. He was in a band when he was younger. I mean, my dad can play all the Beatles songs on his guitar. Like, he loved it.
But church music is strictly church
you
music.
Find
hymnal
this,
music.
Yeah.
Evangelicals, you find like that dichotomy of like there's church and then there's outside of church.
Yeah, well, when my dad came to church with me, the music was loud and crazy, the drums, the guitars, and he was like,
"Yeah, no kidding."
He just seemed very grumpy. My mom was like, "Heck yeah!"
before I was allowed to make my own decisions about such things, my parents went to church, and there's a commercial on late night TV now, and it's got like all the old hymns sung by choirs on them. And I was sitting there with my, sitting at home, and I'm just kind of like singing along with all the little clips that are going through. And Annette looks at me and goes, how the hell do you know all those?
She's
and I
like,
was
rewind.
Like, from age 5 until I was 12 or 13,
it's part of
we
you
went
way.
To church. Yeah. And, you know, that hymnal is 400 songs long.
Just out of
but
curiosity.
There's a lot of favorites in there.
Me too. Like, yeah. Old Rugged Cross.
What a denomination. Do you remember?
We were... In the Prohaska household, it's really kind of a muddled thing. Mm-hmm. We were in when we lived in the eastern part of Pennsylvania, we went to United Church of Christ. Mm. And then I think Grace Community was Presbyterian. So I don't really know that. Again, it was once I got older, going to church was the conduit to potentially going to the country club for brunch afterwards.
Okay.
So if I woke up on a Sunday morning, had a hankering for Eggs Benedict, and wasn't too hungover from the underage drinking I was doing the night before,
right?
I would swing through church with mom and dad. But once it became non-compulsory, I didn't really go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then that was your only church experience? That hasn't been anything?
I actually went to church camp a couple different summers.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You learn everything there.
Yeah.
Right? Girls.
Camp, yeah.
He's watching.
Yeah. Camp Fernbrook, which is actually out near Philly.
I kind of think I remember hearing about that.
Yep, I went to church camp, and it was cool. It wasn't overly religious. It wasn't.
You get to wear jeans and tennis shoes.
Yeah, and you know they plugged it in. You had a scripture reading at dinner every night, but it was summer camp. There was a pool. We went on hikes. You know, there was arts and crafts. And
powwows around the campfire.
Yeah.
It was just they had this one additional theme of, you know.
And really funny is that camp was run by a Jewish woman.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that, I don't know how that all factored into it.
Sounds like clever marketing.
I was going to say, but I did.
But yeah, I learned all the Christian camp songs that I could probably sing today.
Okay, let's do it. No.
I'm not going to sing, I knows it, yippee, I knows it, brother. Them bones going to rise again. Yes.
Wow. That's pretty intense for a child. You think about it.
You know, it's funny. We're talking, and again, we may get to hospitality sooner or later
sometime
this episode, but my head is, and you two are probably the same way, filled with song lyrics, movie quotes, stuff that makes me an interesting conversationalist, completely useless in the world that we know.
But we're entertained by it all, you know, hopscoot
around.
It's
important to our brain, so it's like, no, this is going to get saved forever.
Well,
because it's going to come
right
in handy.
Right when you got here, Matt, I said, Matt, what are you drinking? And he's like, I just get some cranberry juice. And I looked at him and said, what are you on your period? Which is a
line. Or bladder infection, one or the other.
which is a line from The Departed. Mm-hmm. And he immediately knew what the line was. He was like, didn't they kill a guy for that long for saying that? And no, they didn't. They just beat the crap out of him.
They did just beat the crap out of him. We could get off on a Departed rant because I...
You like that movie?
I do not.
You don't not?
I don't.
Why?
Two things. Derek Poston, we're going to be listening to this episode because I'm talking about it. Okay. Any movie that ends with a rat walking across the balcony, when the movie is about rats in the mob, is very heavy-handed.
It's a little prosaic.
It's
it
dirty.
Really is.
No, no, please.
Unnecessary symbolism.
Unnecessary. And then Nicholson's performance.
Why? He was... Wasn't he nominated for an Academy Award for that performance?
It's over the top.
Really?
I know.
This is Jack Nicholson. You see him as the Joker?
Like, over-exaggerated?
You know what? I just recently rewatched the original Batman. And
he's great as the Joker.
He's great. His Joker is fantastic. I mean, because his Joker is
they get
not
these
like...
wonderful toys.
One more time.
It's a good film. You know. What were we talking about?
The Departed.
The Departed. Yeah, it's just not one of my favorite of Scorsese's.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm a big Raging Bull fan. Raging Bull and Goodfellas.
Goodfellas is a great movie.
I've never seen any of them.
What?
Any of them?
No.
Leave this podcast right now.
Okay, bye.
Interesting. are you one of those people that, like, do you constantly find that there are these kind of classic movies that people bring up and... Or is it just specifically Scorsese?
Well, guys are more about movie quotes. Like, I can quote and sing any Sound of Music, West Side Story.
So it's just a variety.
Recite every line.
Okay.
The Hills
so
Are
it's
Alive.
A specific interest of, like...
Sure, yeah.
A gritty look at, like, a taxi cab driver.
There is a hugely flawed part in West Side Story.
Natalie
hugely.
Wood's lip-syncing?
Well, not only that... He's walking through a primarily Puerto Rican neighborhood, screams the name Maria, and one girl comes to the window. Really? Really? That's we're supposed to believe that?
12 girls with the name Maria.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Are you doing your act?
No,
on
I'm
the
not
podcast?
Doing my act. I noticed that when I was a kid.
But, it's like the American Tale. You know how like Fievel's screaming for his dad and, you know, like...
American Tale?
Yeah.
That's not
where
even
he's
a very,
singing
that's not
out
even
to
a
the ocean.
Good animated movie.
Oh, come on.
Well, when
that's
you were a kid... Well,
it's fantastic.
Yeah, it was a good...
It's really good. Especially,
I cried.
Especially for a non-Disney movie that came out in the 80s.
And there was a good moral to the story.
Absolutely.
That's hard to come by anymore. With
they're
any
Jewish.
Kind of
it's clearly in a, you know, it's a, it's a...
It was a yearning. It
yes.
was a find. It was... I gotta do this.
Yeah.
It was a yeah.
From for
and I could relate to it.
Absolutely. I think for our generation, because yeah. I'm 36, so
oh, I'm not gonna say.
Okay.
She's older than that,
but
yeah.
It seems that we
I'll
have
be 39
a 39
in August.
Well, there
so, yeah,
we go.
I don't mind.
Oh my God.
I
see?
Like
podcast
don't
with children.
Oh.
But for our generation, that movie had a pretty impactful.
Okay, that I can that
and
I can
Dom DeLuise.
See.
Dom DeLuise. That's all you have to see. Yeah. Uh
oh.
I got a buzz.
You got a buzz.
Your phone.
Okay, so Lou, where do you tell us a little bit about? Because this is this. It's a fascinating subject to me because it's simply not. I have a cursory knowledge of chocolate. Full disclosure: I am not a big chocolate person.
I don't say it.
I don't.
I can't say that.
I don't eat an overt amount of chocolate desserts. If I have a piece of chocolate cake, it has to be very specific. I have to have a glass of milk with it.
So you spoil with your chocolate or no?
What do you mean?
Are you saying you're not a big dessert person?
No, I'm not a big dessert person overall.
But if you are, you're just particular in what you eat.
Yeah, and it's rarely chocolate.
Well, a lot of people say that about my chocolate.
Let me disagree. I am a total chocolate person and appreciate our fine heritage in Pennsylvania of what we've contributed.
Oh, my God.
To chocolate.
You know what? I
See,
appreciate
I'm glad
the
we have a chocolatier
Hershey's
on.
Chocolate is garbage.
Let me, now, let me ask you this as a chocolatier.
Okay.
Okay. I would, as an advocate for Milton Hershey, would say that Mr. Hershey liberated chocolate to the proletariat by adding a few substitutes to make it cheap enough that people of a working class could finally afford chocolate, Jesus which before Jesus. Then had only been reserved for the upper class who could afford it.
Well, when you add too many
Matthew
preservatives,
Bird, the Karl Marx of the chocolate world.
Thank you. It's all about class warfare.
Jesus
we
Christ.
Will rise up.
Did you actually just say proletariat?
I agree.
I did. I did indeed say proletariat. So now, let me state this. That means I do not view Hershey's chocolate on the same level as a chocolatier's chocolate, mm-hmm. in the same way I don't view McDonald's, the
okay.
same way I view...
Well, yeah, and
they
and
serve two different purposes.
To your point,
yeah.
Once he finally got that formula dialed in, it made chocolate available for the masses. It
That's
really did.
True. It's true.
And then proceeded to donate his fortune to medical research and one of the largest orphanages in the country.
His story as a human being and what he was able to do for children and for the state and for his town, I find to be way more fascinating than the... what he actually did for the world of chocolate. And it may have been all paid for by chocolate.
Right.
But...
he was definitely a philanthropist.
Do you know Milton Hershey's kind of background?
No.
Milton Hershey,
sorry.
He and his wife
You're
were
welcome.
Childless, correct?
I believe that's the story.
And he started an orphanage and ended up raising hundreds and hundreds of orphans in an orphanage that he created. He donated to charities. At one time, Hershey, Pennsylvania was the only town in Pennsylvania that had 100% coverage with electric lights.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was he was
and then
really
the Hershey Medical Center, which he founded
which is still one of the leading medical centers in the world.
It's one of the top trauma centers.
Sounds like I need to do some more research.
Yeah. He's a fascinating guy.
Because I have a little, with my history and my background, I'm all about, you know, wanting to protect children and being part of children's charities. And I give some of my proceeds from what I make off my chocolates to children's charities. I'm all about working with them, supporting them, and things of that nature. So, yeah, I think that's amazing that he did that. Worked with orphanages and, you know.
So this little cup that you gave us.
Yeah, see how there's only a little bit of chocolate on top and on the bottom?
Yes.
Chocolate is just supposed to be the accessory. I want you to taste what's inside. That's why it pairs so well with beers and wines and liquors and whiskey.
The chocolate is accoutrement.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Thanks.
But the back to Milton Hershey. Really, given your philanthropic nature, it would really be an eye opener to get into his story a little bit, because he was, as Maddie said, you know, when we lived in the eastern part of Pennsylvania, anybody who was in, you worried when somebody got evac'd to the Hershey Medical Center, because that means they were really screwed up.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I'm working on
the ambulance. If we heard, we had to take them to Hershey,
that, you know, you were walking into a mess.
That was a problem.
Yeah. His story is completely fascinating. And this is from a guy who, kind of like the Colonel Sanders story, the Dave Thomas from Wendy's story, was an abject business failure for the early part of his life. He started and closed several businesses before he finally hit the formula right.
Yep, no matter what it is, you just got to pick yourself up and keep going.
Yeah, you have
I've been through that many times. Blood, sweat, and tears, been up for 3 days straight making chocolates, going, oh my gosh, you know, and it's going to take time.
Yeah,
so good for them.
Maddie's all about the pick yourself up, and he's an open mic comic. He's used to humiliation and scorn and ridicule.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up.
Let's hear one of your stories.
One of my stories.
Yeah, like the first day you're on stage. Do you remember the very first day you were on stage? And, like, you remember looking at everybody? Was everybody all, like, blurry?
I did 8 minutes and I crushed.
Like, all 3D coming at you, like, psychedelic?
No. So we have to go back to a previous stand-up career. I took a 5-year break.
Oh.
And I don't really consider... Sorry, one moment. I took a 5-year break and... I really didn't consider what that period, what I do now is so different from what I was doing back then, and my outlook is so different, I almost consider it like, oh, that first section doesn't count. So the very first time that I got on stage was actually at a coffee shop in the town I grew up in, and it was a coffee shop that I knew very well, and it was a stacked crowd. And everybody knew me, and I was able to make local references and gibbered and jabbered with nothing close to a setup or a punchline or a joke, but was amusing, and that's all it took. So I had a positive enough response from that. So,
you know what I find
and
watching?
That was the first time that particular heroin got placed in your veins.
And no.
No?
No, no, no. That was definitely... I mean, that was maybe a little dose, like playing with, you know, smoking it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the first time the real injection was ACC.
Oh,
doing that open mic and feeling that response and, like, having a better understanding of, like, oh, you know, setup, punchline, joke. Oh, I get it now. And, like, feeling the response of that and being like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
So,
like, for me, when a comic gets up on stage and they get more personable, like, they're telling a story, but they can be funny about it, have puns in it, like, it's funny, right? But you get to know them as a character, as an internal being. So,
well, it's funny.
Kind of get what I'm saying. It's like, oh, then you feel more attached to that person, then you have more of a connection, then it's more funny.
Matt and I were talking about that, and that's really what you're describing is really somebody's comedic voice. And it's a funny thing when you find your voice, it can be a little unnerving because you're going from just saying things into a microphone to you saying things in the microphone.
It's raw.
Yeah, and you're willing to share an awful lot of yourself with a room full of strangers. And the people who can really do that and ride on that raw edge are the guys that are the superstars.
Yeah, people attach themselves to vulnerability.
At the same
time,
you become
vulnerable, people will listen.
That's one specific style, but I mean, there are plenty of one-liner guys and guys who...
Oh, sure.
Don't... I mean, that... It is... That's one of my favorite styles, but I mean, you see somebody...
What, one-liners?
No. I mean, the stories, yeah. The long form, and like a Russell Hicks that we were talking about, like, that's a different style of, like, crowd work. You have a guy like... you have a guy like a Jim Calloway, who's a local guy, who mm-hmm. does one-liners, and he has some amazingly funny one-liners. I love watching his one-liners.
He's one of the last guys in the local scene that is just a one-liner guy.
But sometimes one-liners feel very robotic. It's like, okay, the next one. But my buddy Josh Sneed in Cincinnati is an amazing comedian.
When you watch a guy who has it mastered, like a Matt Donaher, who's just straight one-liners, but like he's able to create this like complete character that you're so in love with by the end of his set, because it is vulnerable, but at the same time it is on some level a character.
Oh, it's completely put on,
and it's very material. It's almost exclusively material.
Sometimes you know when they try too hard, it just doesn't seem.
Well, the beautiful thing about Matt Donaher is that he is every bit as dorky and weird off stage as he is on stage.
He's such a wonderful, sweet guy.
Oh,
he is.
So affectionate. He is.
I didn't expect him. I expected him to be more reserved, mm-hmm. but he's so outgoing and friendly, which was, you know, which just made me, you know, like him even mm-hmm. that much more. So
back to chocolate. Now that we got off on the Milton Hershey tangent.
This is from Pennsylvania, so hence why you're talking about Hershey and why you know about him. I'm like, I have
our
no
shows
idea.
Tend to run a little toward the odd anyway, but tell us and educate our audience a little bit about there are not only different types of chocolate. There's chocolate, there's dark chocolate, there is
milk chocolate,
but... And educate me about, I always see that there are different percentages on chocolate. There are...
there's a lot of antioxidants in chocolate. The darker you get, the better it is. But then you're trying to satisfy the masses, so you have to think about that.
Okay, so what do the percentages actually mean? Is that the amount of chocolate or the amount of
fat? The rawness.
Oh, it's the
fat
rawness.
Fat is the milk and butter people add into the chocolates at times.
Right.
But it's, like I said, the higher percentage, the more antioxidants, the healthier it is for you.
So if you have like 70%, that's a very dark chocolate, correct?
Yes. I've had up to like 90%. I like it with port wine. I mean, everybody's different. Some people think it's too bitter and muddy feeling or muddy flavoring. I don't know. But some people, like, doing it for so many years, people just have their own little itch. That's why I don't add so much chocolate to my candies.
I got you. So what's your preferred?
What's my preferred?
Yeah.
Me personally, I grew up around chocolate, like I say, my whole entire life. I mm-hmm. smell it all day long. I like to eat chocolate once in a while. But I'm more of a gummy bear kind of girl.
But if I was
going to eat chocolate, it would be like 85% chocolate. Just raw chocolate, nothing in between, just straight up chocolate. Just have little pieces at a time. I like to put it in the freezer. Mm. I like to take a little snap off the brick, and then just suck on it. It lasts longer and it tastes better.
Why is that? Why is the chocolate tastes better frozen?
I don't know. You get that crispy feeling, that sensation. It's like when you eat an orange after it's been in the refrigerator. It's a little more juicier, I think.
Well, I think a lot of times it's all about controlling, really with chocolate, a lot of times it's about controlling the melting point.
Yeah, it's very temperamental.
Like regular butter melts at about human body temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why in cooking, when we, there's an old phrase called monte a bere. And when you're finishing a sauce on the stove, you actually mount butter into it.
Sometimes you want to scorch your butter a little bit,
right,
just to get the sauces right.
And its creaminess and its mouthfeel, and with chilling down the chocolate, it actually, you control the rate of melt better, which is why a lot of times it tastes better when it comes out of the freezer.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it keeps its life. Like, if you were, I know this sounds morbid, but if you were to freeze a body, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's gonna preserve longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it gets down to room temperature, it's gonna taste the same as if you were just to freshly make it.
So are you opposed to white chocolate?
No, I'm very, well, actually, I don't like white chocolate. That's why I'm very choosy about the white chocolate that I use. And a lot of people I've learned to know, they're like, I don't like white chocolate. I don't even wanna try it. I'm like, I will give you $5 out of my pocket if you try it, and if you don't like it, here's the $5.
Well,
People are normally, oh my gosh, I don't even like white chocolate. And yours just melts in your mouth so good.
Their
like,
perception about white chocolate is that it's waxy to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's waxy because a lot of people use hydrogenated oil in their chocolates.
So where do you source your chocolate from?
Chocoa. It's from Mexico.
Oh, do you use exclusively Mexican
Chocoa.
Chocolate?
Yeah, Chocoa chocolate. 56% dark chocolate. So people who aren't like that dark chocolate, but they like milk chocolate. And I do not use any milk chocolate for my chocolates. So what I do is I layer my chocolates. So I build it from the bottom. I put dark chocolate in my paper cup, and then I build it like a sandwich, and then I put white chocolate on top.
Mm-hmm.
So people, they'll taste it more like milk chocolate because that's just a lot of, you know, product to purchase that you don't need to.
No,
so I kind of play with it.
So you create the milk chocolate flavor by layering different chocolates.
Mm-hmm. So when you open the paper cup, the paper from the chocolate, mm-hmm. you're going to see a dark chocolate on the bottom. You're going to see what's in the middle of the candy piece, and then you're going to see the white chocolate on top.
That's really an interesting approach.
It saves money on buying milk chocolate. Yeah.
Wow.
And my most favorite one is the Carmetzel, which is pretzel. Peanut butter and caramel, and I layer a dark and white chocolate. With
I don't see anything wrong with any
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, no. It goes really great with ales.
Does it really?
Yeah. Red ales or, yep, it's double IPAs. Yeah, so.
Knowing literally nothing about chocolate, actually, is milk chocolate simply dark chocolate with milk added? Is that?
It's a lot of milk added to it.
A lot of milk.
Yeah, there's a lot more fat in milk chocolate than there is
dark
chocolate, for sure. Most definitely.
So what's the... I mean, apart from a taste perspective, does milk chocolate behave differently? Does it temper differently? Does it?
It's not as bitter.
Well,
most of it tempers the same at a certain degree.
Really? Even with the addition of milk? Wow.
Some people just buy the straight up cacao beans,
mm-hmm.
and then they pull it apart, crush it down, melt it like powder, but mine's a little different than that. I get the actual, like, chocolate disc that's already been formed. Then
oh,
I temper the discs down.
Nibs.
It's just easier because I only have two hands.
Right.
I'm a one-woman band. I do everything. I prospect. I market. I do all the social media. I buy
have
my product, deliver it,
intern?
Ship it, make it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Package it, label it. I do everything. I
don't have
any help.
You don't have an intern?
I don't have any Oompa Loompas. No, I don't.
You need to get an Oompa Loompa.
I do everything by myself.
Interns are great.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're, oh my God, they're frequent targets.
I just
they're
feel just... like I'm so controlling in my kitchen. You have to know what you're doing if you walk into my kitchen.
Well,
and
no,
it's,
that's
to
not
stop
the,
to train
that's not
somebody
the case.
Is very difficult for
you
me.
Need to get unmolded clay. You need to get somebody who
who's
wants to learn.
Who's going to be another me. I'm going to clone me.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Or, at the very least, an intern who's going to handle more of the social media and marketing end of things.
Sometimes it's hard to let go.
What are you interviewing now? Right in front of me? Really?
Look, I'm not interested.
You are such a media whore.
I have enough unpaid work,
whore.
Sir. Between open mics and you, I am so unpaid.
You know, what's really hilarious.
But you love what you do, right?
He loves half of it.
Half of it.
You fuck. I knew you were going to say that.
The other half.
Well, you know, what's really funny is that he and I are kind of on the same schedule. So we end up talking more podcast business at 1:30 in the morning than we do. Getting him to answer a text at 11 a.m. is really a dicey prospect.
11 a.m. That's
middle of the night.
Yeah, what are you doing?
What's wrong with
the
you?
The sun is out. No.
Are you a vampire? What's going on? You're
I
true?
Am. Yes.
I am too. I don't go to bed till like 3 a.m. I wake up early.
Matt gets a text at 11 a.m. He assumes it's a booty call.
No. I do not know. I assume that it, no. It's
so your days are opposite from each other. Like backwards. Your days are nights and your nights are days.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Nocturnal.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Well, you know, so do you only do candies?
I do like making other things, like apple fritters are another thing I really love to make. I'm not a pastry chef, but I do like to bake, and I love making rubs. I love making marinades. I love making burgers. Oh my gosh, I would love to own a restaurant one day. Yeah, I don't know, one day, who knows, but I have a whole list of a menu already made.
So where, besides Ballast Point, who else do you do chocolates for?
Well, it's not that I do chocolates for, but
who else do you do chocolates based on?
I've paired my chocolates with Modern Times, Belgian Beaver, Coronado Brewing Company,
Belgian Beaver Duck with
Foot.
Their milk stout.
Oh my god,
say,
they're so freaking amazing!
That goes right into chocolate.
Yeah, the chocolate that you just ate, the Dharma Cup, goes great with their peanut butter milk stout. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, it's like. I won't say it again, but it's like a party in your mouth. But I've also paired with Green Flash, mm-hmm. Mother Earth, and, oh my gosh, I feel bad if I'm going to miss somebody. Just 15 local breweries. My mind can't think right now. There's just so many.
I think I'm glad I met you because I think that I have a real opportunity for you. We do... And we are going to continue to do beer pairing dinners here. It's something that we started once I got on board. We have done one so far. We have another one on the books. And I would love to have that element, even post-dessert. It's a fantastic finish to any kind of meal.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be great. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
And I've learned to have pre-packaged ones already, the pairings that we've done, because people want more. They, mm-hmm. like, I want to take them home.
Yep.
Like, I want to give them to a friend, or I just kind of want to consume them secretly.
And the, and not only that, it would also get you an introduction into a lot of the other maniacs that I run with. That Maddie
I like
has.
Maniacs. Maddie, I don't want to deal with anybody else that's not a maniac.
No, well, he's met most of them, and they're all special in their own way.
Colorful group of characters, that bunch. Let me tell you.
But
I'm a chameleon. I can adapt anywhere, anybody. It's okay.
So where do you get your inspiration from? How do you go about the process of, okay, I'm going to build a new candy right now?
I don't know. It's just like if I taste something and I'm like, oh my gosh, it just hits me.
It's kind of an organic thing.
Yeah, it just, like, this shining light, like, it's a light bulb above my head. It just comes and goes whenever it wants. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I taste a beer, I'm like, it's not even happening.
Right.
And, you know, to be honest, I've had breweries come to me and want to pair with my chocolates, and I have had to say no. I do not like your beer. I will not stand my business next to your business. I have a name.
Wow.
I feel bad, but at the same time,
no,
I have to be true to it's mine because it's mine.
you shouldn't feel bad. That is
I'm not a dishonest person.
Attitude.
Yeah, I'm not a dishonest person. If I taste your beer and I don't like it, I'm sorry. I can't do it. I'm not even going because I feel, of course, I'm biased because it's mine or like my babies. They're mine. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to stand by somebody's name that I trust, that I believe in, that I want to build. Like – Ballast Point is great. They got bought out. That's amazing. But now I'm working with the underdogs, somebody who I want to help build up.
Right.
So if I have a pairing with you, let's do social media. Let's get your name out there.
Yeah,
it's not that I'm worried about...
Ballast Point's money worries are kind of over.
But they still have amazing beer and liquor.
Them a billion-dollar check.
But you're looking for the next challenge while maintaining your own
identity. Yeah, I love a challenge. Give it to me. Let me taste a beer. Ooh, I love to design it. Like the one I did for Belching Beaver. Like, oh my God, the Great Lay. I'm like, oh my God, I want to design something around this. You know, I took pecan praline cream, caramel. I put a fresh basil on top with it.
They have a beer named a Great Lay.
Yeah, it's a really, really, really good.
I'm not even going to go there. I was just about to say who doesn't like a Great Lay, but oh my God.
And with the green and the orange and yellow, it's like you're wearing a lay around your neck, you know? The Great Lay.
Okay.
It's perfect.
Yeah, because that's what they totally meant.
Yeah, I know. It's spelled that way. So after maybe 12 of them, you'll feel like.
Right.
Craft beer, the last refuge of the pun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it really is.
But there's so many beers with puns. I love it. It's so great.
Well, you know, I completely get what you're saying. We did the Five Chef Society at Small Bar, and we talked about it on
the... It's a great bar. I love that place.
Oh, Small Bar,
always
spectacular.
Packed. The food is amazing.
Karen, hear that, Karen?
Their tap list is awesome.
But when we did the Five Chef Society, we didn't go in the typical order of lightest to darkest. Five of us sat around... We poured off some society beers, and everybody was sipping on one, and each chef at their own time went, okay, I got it. And that's how we actually picked the pairings. I love the Harlot from Society.
Oh, that's the second brewery I brewed with or paired with.
And
Society's great.
I took a sip of that, and going back to your point, immediately knew in my head what I wanted to pair with that.
Yep, see? It's an epiphany.
I can't do that with a lot of breweries.
Boy, and I tell you what, I could see that while standing at the front door checking IDs. So I'm glad I was able to share that moment with you.
You can come to the next one.
Oh, I'm sure I can, and I'll be checking IDs.
Checking IDs, because you do it. You're the best in the business, man.
No, Miles is hands down a better ID checker.
But it's true that light bulb goes off. Like, oh my gosh! Like it just hits you.
Well,
like,
this
is exactly what I want.
The first beer dinner we did here was with Stone, and here being the incredible Madhouse Comedy Club, where Cone of Silence Studios is located.
Heck yeah, I love this place.
But a lot of their beers, they're so big and they're so bold, and I would sip them and like nothing would come to mind. But the beer that I actually paired mine with Arrogant Bastard, which is one of their longest standing beers. It's one of their core beers that I guess they're not going to brew anymore.
It's too bad.
And
it's like part of your memories are gone now.
as soon as I tasted that one, I was like, I know where I can go with this. And it's interesting how that inspiration kind of, it can be a single note in the beer. It can be the beer as a whole. And I like to, do you like to contrast or do you like to complement more with your
chocolates? Challenge, I like to contrast. It's a challenge. Like the candied ginger with pretzels, that just, who does that with caramel and candy ginger? That just sounds disgusting, but it works.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to and I hate to compare this to a pregnant woman, but when my sister, when she was pregnant, she put pickles in her salad. I was like, ew, like bread and butter pickles. So I was like, that's disgusting. And then I tried it. I was like, ooh, it's actually pretty good.
Right.
And then my mom, she dips, potato chips in chocolate. I'm like, that sounds gross, but the salty was sweet. Something, it just works.
There are certain flavors out there that there are certain things that I've had that you go, you know what, this shouldn't work together. And my favorite example of that, watermelon and blue cheese salad. I can tell by the look on your face.
I'm ready to throw up. It sounds so gross. But
are you pregnant right
wait
now?
Wait a minute. No, what? Did you just repeat that?
Watermelon, blue cheese with a little bit of red onion,
The salty, sweet, with the musky, rustic flavor.
Exactly.
The, okay, I get it.
It sounds like this is the stupidest thing I have ever thought about. And it sings. It absolutely sings because there's enough salt in the blue cheese that it brings out even more of the sweetness of the watermelon. The sweetness with that musky blue cheese, the sharpness, the piquancy of the onion. It's a spectacular salad.
Well, it's like somebody's like caprese salad. Ooh, basil with mozzarella and tomato. That sounds gross. Aesthetics with, yeah, I could see that working. Oh, yeah.
The next
sure.
time you have watermelon in the kitchen, could you?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Right. I would love for you to try it. And
try
you toss it with a little bit of balsamic
vinegar. You sold it so well. Like,
well,
like wow, that sounds good.
Balsamic vinegar is amazing. So, mm-hmm. growing up in Pennsylvania, so did you, when you had watermelon, did you put salt on it?
My grandmother does from Georgia. Though I think that's more of a southern.
It's
thing.
More of a
so
southern
good,
thing.
Salty with sweet. But let me tell you what, as a woman, I wake up in the morning, I can't put anything on. I'm so bloated.
Sure.
You cannot mix that salt with the sweet too much. But I love salt on watermelon.
Kidneys are just.
My
screaming.
Mom literally takes an apple, a Granny Smith apple, and she'll put salt on it and eat it.
Okay, you do things with pretzels.
Yes.
This is for a Pennsylvanian. This is a very near and dear subject to our heart.
All right, let's do this.
What pretzels do you use?
I use Snyder's. It's got more of a sourdough, salty. But lately,
Snyder's acceptable?
I've been using gluten-free pretzels because it's more crispy and salty.
No, that's heresy. You're a witch. You'll be burned
you know,
later.
I don't really agree with gluten-free stuff, but the crunch lasts longer with the caramel and the peanut butter. Cause
it's because it's, your, it's, I make it's my building supplies.
Well,
it's, not,
I make,
it's not a pretzel.
I make my peanut butter from scratch. There's a lot of oil. So the oil goes into the Snyder's pretzel, and it makes it feel stale sometimes. I want people to have that crunch
Snyder's
in there.
Pretzels are borderline stale anyway.
Yeah, I mean, like, picking Snyder's is like, oh, what type of soda do you serve? Royal Crown. Oh, all right, well.
Yeah.
Okay, Maddie.
RC.
Your pretzel. Your pretzel of choice. Are you a nuts guy?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you have to be.
Yeah. especially just because that creepy blue girl in the front is... I love seeing her. Like, oh, she's there. Everything's okay.
Yeah, I don't know who decided that was the corporate mascot
Apparently,
for that. They're like,
somebody
wow,
back
this
in the
is 40s. This is spooky and weird. It's the Children of the Corn vibe on a pretzel package.
They'll scare the children into buying it. They'll love it.
I got an idea,
That's
Chief.
What makes it
I
so
got an idea.
You've got a promotion.
All right. Well, guys, this has been weird. This has been all over the fucking board. But Lou, you have been a delightful guest.
Oh, you guys are
awesome. Really have.
Like, I want to keep talking. This is so great.
But we have one more shot in front of us, and I know you have something to do later on. And if you want to not do your shot. That's really not an option. That's not how this show works. yeah, if you wanted to have a responsible day, you shouldn't have come on a podcast called Shot in a Beer. Well, all right, guys. Before we head on out, Lou, where can we find you on social media?
Well, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook.
Do you want to give people an address, or
sure.
should we just cast about the internet because you are so huge?
Right.
Are you like Google? Are
no.
we going to just are we just
One
going
day.
To get on the
I'm
interweb
the
and find
Watch
you?
Out.
give us your social media digits.
Instagram and Twitter. It's at it's mine for you. So it's ITSMYNE. The number 4, the letter U.
Oh, God, you're so cute.
It's mine for you. And then on Facebook, it's just, it's mine. ITSMYNE.
Okay. Maddie?
No chocolates at the end.
How about you?
Let's see. You can find me on Instagram, mm-hmm. @_bird, and Twitter at @jmatthewbird. So, and... Also have a show coming up, don't we?
Yes, we do. We have a show coming up. A show I'm really excited about. It's April 12th. We are doing it in conjunction with Hearts for San Diego, which is an event planning company that does really, really good work with charities around the county. And we're doing this benefit for a special needs play date, which arranges play dates for parents with special needs children. And we're doing this because it is also, I believe it's in conjunction with Autism Month. So there's going to be a lot of blue here that night. Great lineup of comedians and a really, really terrific cause. And I would love to see all the Shot in a Beer fans and people who like doing good things and laughing to come out to this comedy show.
Sounds like a good time.
It sounds like a good time, and you are hosting.
And I'm hosting.
And I will donate.
You will donate?
Wonderful. I will donate a box of chocolates for you guys.
I will let Karen know that, as I am now a board member on Hearts for San Diego.
And I'm all about children's charity, so hey.
Well, good. and as always, you can find the show on Twitter at Shot in a Beer Pod. Our email address is shotinabeerpodcast@gmail.com, and we are on Facebook. You can actually just type in Shot in a Beer in the search bar. It'll come up with us. Or if you want to use the more formal address on that, it's Drinks with Chefs. And you all know how to find me. If you're listening to this show, you're probably all friends of mine. There's only 12 of you that listen to this show anyway. So, guys, we have one more on the way out. Lou, it has been a pleasure.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Look up Milton Hershey. And
yeah, I'm going to check that out.
And let's get on with the day. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Phoenixville. Yo. Chaplains.com. Yeah. Yo. Live and direct. To put the 215 in effect, y'all. I might wreck, y'all. And we came a long way to let you know that the band is slow mo. Check it. Hey, yo, we're live and direct. To put the 215 in effect, y'all. I might wreck, y'all. And we came a long way to let you know that the band is slow mo. But the taste of some lime had me patiently creating the line. If I buy a dub, I'm saving a dime to recline when I'm relaxing. Hey yo, we're Shaq and Maxin. Don't pass the scene, the grass is green. You if you're asking, we're talking about the Shaq of Maxson. Y'all.
Thank you for listening to A Modern Profession Podcast. For more podcasts you might enjoy and information on live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check us out on Twitter @AModernPro or on Instagram @AModernProfession. Thank you.